Hey, Talk Shop fans, I have a very exciting announcement. Join me and Fenimore Lane at the Mayflower Inn and Spa in Washington, Connecticut for a celebration of design on Saturday, May 18th. Journey to the countryside to shop our all-day design bazaar with two tents and over 30 amazing vendors in the home, fashion, and lifestyle space. Or take part in our design summit with one-of-a-kind panels and speakers, including Talk Shop Season 2 guest Annie Myers-Shire of This Oak House, in conversation with me and Farrow & Ball's color expert. Feel free to bring the kids and come hungry. Danry has children's activities covered, and Lee Jofa will be hosting a beautiful picnic by the pond. It's sure to be magical, and there's no time to wait. We already sold out of our all-day passes, so to learn more and pick up your tickets, visit the link in the show notes or via my Instagram bio. I hope to see you all there.
I want people to always walk in my house and feel comfortable, whether they care about design. I mean, we have these garden tours. We have 600 people come one day. They come to look at the garden, but they walk in that barn and they go, oh my God, this is the most comfortable room. They don't really know that much about design, but they feel, you feel something. And that's what I hope that my legacy will be, is that you feel something.
Welcome to Talk Shop. I'm Ariel Oaken, a New York-based interior designer, writer, and editor looking to bring a little bit of magic into our homes every day. After years as a writer and editor in the interiors world, I founded my own editorial site, Fenimore Lane, in 2020, and the Talk Shop interview series was born. Each week, I delve into the personal experiences of the top interior designers and tastemakers around the globe. This week, I welcome one of the most talented names in design, the queen of contemporary American decorating, Bunny Williams. Known for balancing refined beauty, welcoming livable appeal, and attention to detail, Bunny is one of Architectural Digest's AD100 Hall of Fame members, among many other accolades. Born and raised in the countryside near Charlottesville, Virginia, Bunny moved to New York after college and kicked off her career at the antique gallery Stare & Company, followed by 22 years with the iconic design firm Parrish Hadley Associates. In 1998, Bunny founded her own firm, Bunny Williams Incorporated, and design history was made. Recently, Bunny Williams Incorporated received a new name, welcoming business partner Elizabeth Lawrence under the firm's new title, Williams Lawrence. Bunny's businesses include Bunny Williams Home, the firm's line of furnishings, lighting, art, and accessories, and licensed product lines with Ballard Designs, Lee Jofa, Dash & Albert, Curry & Company, and Mirror Home. Her most recent design book, Bunny Williams, Life in the Garden, leads readers on an intimate look at her much-celebrated home and gardens in the Connecticut Berkshires that she's spent the last 40 years developing. Please join me as we welcome the incredible Bunny Williams to the podcast. Bunny, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I'm so grateful to you for coming on.
Well, it's so nice to be here, and I can't wait for our chat to begin.
Me too. We have been collecting questions from the girls in my office, and I've been jotting down questions while I'm thinking, when I'm driving, or whatever I'm doing the past few weeks in the lead up to this. And we've all just been so excited about this episode. So in my research about how you started out in your career, I saw that you moved to New York right after college, and you started working at Stare, which is the prestigious antiques dealer. And then you ended up at Parrish Hadley, the absolutely iconic American institution, for 22 years. And then you founded your own firm almost 40 years ago, which is amazing, in 1988. Let's chat a little bit about the beginning. Were you always interested in design? I know you kind of had a watershed moment at the Greenbrier.
You know, I grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia. My family, everybody was very horsey. And, you know, we lived in the country and we had animals and it was wonderful. I wasn't the greatest equestrian. And at one point I said to my mother, is there anything in the world besides horses? You know, as a child, mommy would take us to look at, you know, historic houses and gardens and, you know, all the things that you do when you have a traditional background. So I kind of took it in. You don't know when you're 12 years old what you're going to do in life, but it was going to the Greenbrier Hotel when I was probably 15 or 16. And Darcy Draper had just finished it. I mean, it was just opening.
Wow.
And I walked into this place and there were emerald green walls, plaster palm trees, things that you see today all the time. But I can tell you, when I was 16 years old, that was revolutionary.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, what fun. I'd always been interested in art. I'd painted and sort of realized what an interior designer, what it was.
Yeah.
So when it was time to go to college, I chose a junior college that had an interior design program, but I just was dying to get to New York. And the rest is history in a way.
That's amazing. And I was reading about, so you went to Garland Junior College, and I was wondering, was interior design a common major back then like it is now, or was it a little bit more esoteric and you kind of had to find a program?
You had to find it, but this Garland in those days was a ladies' school. It was a two-year course. And so you could study fashion, you could study interior design, art. So that was much more my interest than trying to study calculus and whatever.
I'm very much with you on that. And then you ended up at Stair. So what drew you to antiques? And was that right after you graduated Garland?
Well, I had always, you know, my parents had antiques and collected it. And when I came to New York and my parents said, you want to live in New York? Well, you're going to have to pay for your own apartment. And I'm like, oh, really? So it meant getting a job. And I went to a lovely lady who was sort of had an employment agency for young ladies, supposedly. And she showed me the things that were available. And I thought, oh, I love antiques. That would be a fabulous job. So I was 20 years old and I was hired as the receptionist. And it was phenomenal. I mean, I'm a quick learner. I knew a little bit, not a lot. You know, I always say to young people, go get every experience you can, because in the end, your clients come to you because you are knowledgeable. And if you're not knowledgeable, they're not going to believe in you. And, you know, I'm looking at auction catalogs all the time. I'm guiding my clients to buy furniture. I need to know really what I am asking them to do.
Right.
And some of my friends went to work at auction houses. It may not be forever, but the education you get from it is phenomenal.
It's so true. I always say my biggest regret in my career is that I didn't work at a place like your firm, because I feel like before you go out on your own, and we'll talk a little bit about this, but before you go out on your own, I think that education is just builds a foundation that you end up making a lot of mistakes that you could have saved yourself. And it's also just, it's priceless. I mean, you get an exposure to things that you wouldn't get otherwise.
Absolutely.
So you were at Stair, and then Stair inevitably brings you to Parrish Hadley.
Right. I mean, I had always wanted to work for a designer, and I was at Stair for 2.5 years, and I knew I wasn't going to stay there. So one day I walked up the street and asked if there was any opening. And it was very interesting because Mr. Hadley, who was not a partner at that time, had been there and he needed a secretary. And so I had met them because they would come into Stair & Company as clients, you know, to buy things and bring their clients in. So they kind of thought, oh, well, she seems to fit into this. And so I got hired as Albert's secretary. And, you know, I think that, again, you need to do every role in your business to understand the business. I mean, we can all be creative, but a lot of creative people get themselves in trouble because they don't understand it's a business. And to type the purchase orders, to have to write down what Mr. Hadley wanted and to write it out and understand about checking stock and fabrics. You can't just order the fabric. You have to get the cutting for approval because often is a variation. These are all things that you learn over and over and over again. And when you're working for someone else, you see these things. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, as you say, when you start your own business, you have this incredible amount of knowledge that you've picked up from working in a firm.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes through experience and osmosis. You see how the firm sort of structures things on the business side. I think a lot of creative people have trouble with the structure and the organization side of business. And when you get to kind of learn under the tutelage of somebody who's done it so well, you know, you've got sort of a built-in mentor there and you learn from that.
And you can see what can go wrong. I mean, you can see what happens. And you know, is the sofa going to fit in the elevator of the apartment building?
Oh, yes. Into?
I mean, all of these things that can you get it up a staircase? And we're doing this small a guest house for somebody. And I wanted to buy this big farm table. And I thought, I better ask the builder how big a table I can get up this small staircase. So I couldn't buy a table. But I know that, you know, my radar goes off because you see it.
Yes. Well, I've listened to almost every podcast you've been on, and I'm always so fascinated by your stories, as we're talking about the beginning of your career, about being at Parrish Hadley and about Albert and Sister. Do you have a favorite memory of working there? And what do you think your biggest takeaway from both Albert and Sister is that you kind of still carry with you today?
I often feel like I'm sort of a combination of the two because they were so very different.
Yeah.
I mean, Mrs. Parrish was, she was an instinctive designer. She never measured anything. She didn't even know how to open a tape measure.
That's amazing.
She didn't know how to read a floor plan, and she couldn't draw anything. She would be so funny. She'd be sitting there talking about a project, and she'd try to draw it out on a napkin or a piece of paper, and it was completely out of scale. It had nothing to do. And yet, she could go shopping for that room and find the perfect scale furniture for it. I mean, she just instinctively saw it.
Like an innate talent.
She didn't like the discipline of, you know, sticking to a floor plan. I mean, if she saw a great piece of furniture, you'd think, oh, well, we have to have this. We'll find a place for it. And we'll, you know, even on an installation when everything had been thought out, she would go in and rearrange it or move it around or flop it this way or that way. But she could make a magic to a space.
Yeah.
And Albert was a skilled teacher. He made us draw everything. He made us do every elevation.
And he did teach, right? He was taught at Parsons?
Yeah, he taught. He was a teacher and he taught us. You know, I used to have to do schemes and present it to him. And he'd say, now what are you going to put that fabric on? Are you sure? Because, you know, you're very naive and or you're trying to make it work. But he made us think about design. You know, it's funny. I remember once that Albert, we were doing a Kips Bay show house, and Albert had decided Albert was going to do it without her. He had this new fabric he designed, and it literally was a little red line with a cross stripe. I mean, it was the simplest pattern, and he had it printed in many yards, and he just slip covered all the furniture in this room in this little red stripe. The room was painted white. There wasn't a lot of furniture in it. It was very Albert, as you know, if you look at the way he lived, it was very minimal.
Yeah, it was pared down. And
very pared down. And yet there was a charm, except it was rather empty. Mm-hmm. So Mrs. Parrish finally comes over to look at the room. And she said, well, this room's just not finished. This is terrible. And she grabs me.
Oh, my God.
She had a driver and a big station wagon. We went around to every shop in New York. And in those days, there were lots of them. And she said, I'll take this. I'll take that. I'll take that. We loaded up the car with accessories and things and came back. And she clobbered the room with, you know, accessories, pillows, chairs, whatever. I mean, I have to say, it was better when she was finished.
That's amazing.
And that was the combination of the two. I mean, it was really quite funny.
I feel like that's their alchemy too, I think. And that trickles into your hallmark and your portfolio too. I think it's things are edited and they're tailored and they're classic, but they also have those little flourishes and interesting details and kind of uniqueness that makes these rooms feel so special and also unique to their owners. And I think that's where the magic is.
Yeah, I think that I want things to be the right scale. I know where the furniture is going. I know when I want something high in a room, something low, there's a plan.
Right.
But then the fun part is we're able to buy a wonderful two lots of fabulous quilts from the Getty sale at Stair. And beautiful. I mean, you just don't see them, you know, and they'll go over the foot of the bed or they'll go over the back of the sofa. Things to just relax the design, to make you feel like, is this decorated? Or to me, that's important.
It's so true. And I think it's like unbuttoning a button on a button down shirt.
Yeah, true.
I've read that you decided to start your own firm after having the partner discussion a few times there, and it wasn't panning out the way you wanted. And then one night you sort of woke up in the middle of the night and you decided you were going to leave. What was that like, taking that leap? And how did you know the timing was right? I know a lot of people listening might kind of be in a similar situation.
I mean, a couple of things happen. You have these kind of monumental things. I think my father died very suddenly. I mean, just I was very close to him and he's just gone. And you wake up to life. You wake up to, wait a minute, life is fragile. I also had been working for a couple of years to work on a plan to stay because I was very fond of them. And actually, I was doing practically half of the business of the firm. Most of the clients were coming to me. And I went to talk to somebody and they said, what is your problem? And I said, well, I'm just worried about the business. You know, it's so, I know I'm creative. I know I can run it. But, you know, Parrish Hadley has this accounting department and has everything is so set up. And I said, I'm not sure I'm good at that. And she said, well, don't you know there are people who are good at that? They can't do what you do. And I said, really? And so there was this light bulb went off in my head to say, yeah, you hire somebody to set up your business for you. And I think when I sort of started to think about it, as I said, I literally did wake up one night, sat bolt upright in bed, and I said, I am gone. And I went in, Mrs. Parrish was in Maine, and I went in and I said to Albert, this is it, you know, there's no more discussion. And it was a good time because I just finished some projects. I was about to start three or four big projects, and it was just the right time to do it.
Wow. I've heard you talk about before how you mentioned you can, you know, you can outsource accounting and things like that. And 10 years ago, when I was really nervous about going out and starting my firm, I heard you on a podcast say that. And you really, it touched me. And that was a big reason why I kind of had the confidence to go out and do it. Because like you said, I could not get through a calculus class either. And
and most designers can't.
Yeah.
We were put on life to be creative, not to be analytical. And yet I can read my business things very clearly, profit and loss. I want to know what gets spent on things. I know how to look at it.
Yes.
I don't know how to do the taxes. I don't know how to do any of that, but I certainly know how to look at a balance sheet.
Yes. You have the bones of it, but right, it gives you the ability to take on the things that you're really good at also.
Exactly. Exactly.
You've seen the design world change so much in the almost 40 years since Bunny Williams Incorporated was founded. What are some of the biggest shifts you've noticed? And is there anything you keep with you from a more old school approach and then anything new that you've really taken to?
I think the old school for me is never going to be old school. Everybody has got to go shopping. You have got to go look at things. You've got to travel. Instagram doesn't do it. Pinterest doesn't do it. If you can't walk into a shop, now there are fewer shops and you're going to have to get in the car and go find them, but you cannot do great work from a computer.
Yeah.
You can do basic work. You can do work that anybody else can do. But if you want to make that magic, you've got to go buy the stack of quilts or you know, every weekend I'm doing this, as I say, this small guest house and you know, I found things in the country. I found this amazing set of pottery for the kitchen. I've never seen it before. They don't have a website. There's some, you know, antique center outside of Great Barrington.
Yep.
But I would never have seen that. And it was $800. So you will do more for your clients and make more magic if you go and explore and find things. So many things I see in a magazine, I can tell you where every one of those things came from.
Yes, exactly. And then it's not as special because it doesn't feel unique to the owner either.
Right. And so old school, I would say shopping. I have to say the internet allows you to find new sources, new dealers. Mm-hmm. It's opened the world to a lot of things. I think that's very beneficial. You know, for the young, you can build a career. I mean, you can have a website and all of a sudden you're a famous decorator. That can happen. And I remember, you know, I was holding my breath to get a project in a magazine. You don't even have to do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, Instagram kind of allows people to create their own version of editorial, which is kind of an amazing thing.
Yeah.
I always have you in my head when I'm doing a floor plan anywhere. I hear you. Does someone have a place to put their drink? Is it comfortable? Have you sat in the chair?
And also, how do you relate to each other? You know, if you go in a room and there are two chairs over in the corner, nobody's going to sit over there.
No, and you're so right. I mean, it's not comfortable. If you don't have a place to put your coffee cup, you're not going to go to the chair because it doesn't make sense.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about longevity, because Bonnie Williams is the most respected interior design firm in America and probably in the world. It's often referred to as a training ground, much in the same way that you speak of Parrish Hadley. Why do you think that is? And what do you think makes for a recipe for lasting success and longevity in a design world that, you know, as we talked about Instagram, it's marked by a lot of change and fast-paced trends and sometimes high turnover. So what do you think about that?
Well, I feel like, you know, when I started my business and have had this business for a very long time, I respected everybody. I look back on my own self and, you know, I wanted people, I knew they would probably go on their own. I wanted to give them the best education. I'm not frightened of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people are like, they're paranoid. I'm not paranoid. You know, if they go and want to start their own career, I want them to. I started my own. So I'm not afraid of that. We also have a very wonderful working environment here. People like to be here. Sometimes at Parrish Hadley, it could be really difficult. Mrs. Parrish could often be a terror. You know, there are days when I was like, uh-oh. And I never wanted people to not want to come to work.
Yeah.
And I think that Albert was generous with his teaching to all of us. I hope I've been that way to the people that have come through this company. And I'm very good friends with them. I mean, they love me. I love them. When they're in New York, I want to see them. You know, we've made that relationship. I mean, they worked for me for a long time and I want to always have that relationship.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky now that Elizabeth Lawrence, who came to me as an intern, you know, it was time for her to talk about her future. And I said, look, I would love for you to be a partner. I mean, she's been invaluable to me. I feel like a lot has gone off my shoulders. A lot of the business, insurance, all these things that you deal with, she deals with. She and my assistant, Carolyn, and it allows me a little bit more life and time to go shopping.
Right. And after 40 years, you definitely deserve it.
Exactly. I love what I do, so I don't have any intention of not doing it, but I don't want to always have to be worried about a lot of the more mundane things.
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes sense. I mean, it gives you the chance to do more of what you're so excellent at, which is that magic.
And I'm very excited about Bonnie Williams Home. You know, I started it to make a drinks table because I couldn't find any drinks tables and bedside tables. I like bedside tables that have a drawer and some shelves. I don't know about you, but
yes.
I have all this stuff and I couldn't find them. So then, you know, it's grown and we have these wonderful lamps and I get to go to Southeast Asia, Vietnam.
Which is amazing that you go to all these places. I know the girls on my team, we never miss a Bunny event. So all the book signings and John Funt's exhibition work, they're always there. And the girl, sometimes I can't go because I have to put my kids to sleep and I live in Westchester, so I'm an hour away. But the girls were telling me, you were telling them all about your travels to Southeast Asia and sourcing and kind of developing everything for Bonnie Williams Home. And it's so fascinating, you know, how much goes into it. And I mean, it really shows because we shop it all the time at our firm. How do you think your aesthetic has developed over the years since you've founded your firm, or do you think it's kind of stayed consistent throughout?
Well, I think you grow because, you know, you want to do more contemporary things. You realize that life has changed for people. Often people want a much simpler way of living. The way I like to live takes work.
Right.
I happen to love to set the table and I'm a homebody in a way, but you know, a lot of people don't live that way. And so our lifestyle changes.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's exciting to see new craftsmen, new people making new furniture, new light fixtures. You know, and again, it comes back to my thing of, I still want to buy a really beautiful piece of wood furniture, but put a modern mirror over it, you know. Yeah. I have a house I've been doing in Chicago, and you know, the table, the English dining room table, which actually works really well because you can make it big or little, and we're putting a very contemporary light fixture over it. So it's that span of time, and that I find really exciting, that you don't just stay in the 18th century or the 19th century, you move to the 21st century or beyond, and that becomes really interesting.
Yes, I think that's the school of bunny right there.
Just open your brain and your eye to what's new. You know, it's funny. I am doing this apartment in New York, and it's in a very traditional building. And somebody did over the lobby, whose name I won't mention, very famous designer. And frankly, I think it looks like a dentist's office. I mean, I'm sure all this furniture was very expensive. But I went in there, and I'm like, well, first of all, the scale's wrong. And it's all this, you know, handmade contemporary furniture.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, I thought I liked it better the other way.
Well, sometimes when things are so contemporary all at once, and to your point, it's about the mix.
Right.
It can feel like you're on a set, like you're in a mid-century movie set, or you're...
That's what I felt. I walked in this lobby and I thought, I'm in a mid-century movie set, and this is going to be dated in 5 minutes.
Yes, exactly. Because it's not of the era, it's trying to be of the era, and that never really works, I think.
Right, right.
As a firm, I mean, you've worked with people from all over the world, some of the most beautiful homes and spaces on earth. Are there any projects that stand out as highlights that you're particularly proud of, or is there a story from a project you've maybe never shared before?
Oh, there's so many. It's sort of, that's almost like asking you to pick your favorite child.
Right. I know. It's almost impossible.
I've had wonderful clients. I mean, I've done 5 houses for some people. So, you know, they become part of the family. I think the ones that stick out in your mind are some of the ones that are the biggest nightmare. And I look back on it. I mean, everybody, it's wonderful when you work with clients you love, they trust you, you have a great working relationship. But sometimes things can not always be like that.
Right.
And I actually was interviewed to do a big project in the Midwest. Everybody told this lady, who is a very successful single woman, that she should hire me. And she interviewed me, and she went and hired another designer. That designer was the architect of a house. To make a long story short, after a couple of years, I get a phone call from her chief person that she wants to talk to me again. And I said,
"Oh God,
what do you mean? I've already been there, done that." And I said, "I'm not coming out there." I mean, we had a chance. So I ended up going, and there was a plan of a house. There was a basement dug. Imagine a basement dug.
And this is years later?
Yeah, it was 2.5, 3 years later.
Oh my God.
And yet the house, there was no floor plan. There was a footprint of a house. The rooms hadn't been resolved. It was a mess. I said, I can't do this. I mean, it was huge. It was a huge, huge project. But I did it because...
Oh, you did?
Well, she kept talking me into it. Like, you know, the only person can do it. Anyway, I did it.
Wow.
She was very difficult. But the one thing that was interesting, she was European. And she wanted to go shopping in Europe. And I said, well, of course, you know, to furnish the house. And I said, yes, I will, you know, meet you. We can go to France and, you know, Belgium. And I know all these places. She said, well, I'm going to give you a list that I've gotten from my friends. So she gives me a list. I've never heard of any of these places, not one of them.
Also, the audacity of giving Bunny a list to go shopping.
Very bullheaded. So we had a driver, a car and a driver. So we go to this town. It was the ugliest furniture. I mean, it's furniture that I would put in the fire heap.
Oh my God.
And she knew it. I mean, she didn't want to admit it. So then we go to a place that I wanted to take her to, and we buy a number of things. What I'm saying is that by the end of the trip, she trusted me because my knowledge came through. I could prove to her that I knew what I was talking about. And it was not always easy. There were several times I wanted to quit, but we actually became very good friends.
And also, sometimes those projects are the best because it's almost like you think you're never going to be able to do it. And it's so satisfying when you're done and you've finished it. And that you not only have you come out on the other side, but it's beautiful. And you've somehow managed to have a wonderful relationship with them when at the beginning it was cantankerous.
Oh, really rocky. Because it was an enormous house, sort of Palladian style and indoor swimming pool. I mean, it was pretty amazing.
Wow.
But it wasn't always easy. But as I say, we did remain very good friends.
I want to talk a little bit about your books because you have written a series of design books, which are so iconic. I have to tell you, An Affair with the House is the first interior design book that I really remember studying. My mom bought it for me when I was in high school, and it traveled with me to college and then to my first apartment in the city. And then when I moved in with my husband, and now I still have that copy at my house. And now your new book, Bunny Williams, Life in the Garden, is coming out on March 5th. So let's talk about that a little bit. I know it gives sort of an intimate look at your home and your personal garden in Connecticut that you've spent the last 40 years developing. So I want to hear all about it.
Well, you know, I always say, oh, I'm never going to do another book. And Annie Schlechter, who I had not met before, she came up to photograph our new bedroom for Veranda magazine. And she kind of fell in love with the property. And she was there for 2 days. And then she just started shooting a lot of things. And when her pictures came back, they hit me in a way that, I don't know. I mean, you look at your own house and it's photographed and it's here and there, but she somehow captured something that I think she captured an essence. You know, so many design books, you know, we try to photograph the room. We want to capture the room. It's very hard to photograph a room, as I'm sure you know. I mean, you're looking at an 8x10 page of a room that's big. Often the romance is taken away, the soul is taken away. And I said to Annie, look, I want you to come back. I'll pay you to come back for a 2-day shoot. And I'm not going to tell you what to shoot.
Oh, wow.
I want you to go around this property, particularly the gardens, the outbuildings. I don't want to photograph the inside of the house again because it's been documented.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of new developments in the garden and a lot of new spaces. And I said, I just want you to go and take pictures. And then the other thing that was happening is that during COVID, my niece and her now husband moved up. They were living in Brooklyn and they came up, decided to get married. So during COVID, they got married in our barn with just my family and his family.
That's so nice.
There were 8 of us and the dogs. And now they have a baby, little Ben.
Oh.
And they're still living in the guest house.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That's so nice for you.
He's an amazing photographer. And every day in the morning before he works online, he goes through the garden and takes pictures of the flowers. I mean, individual flowers.
Wow.
So when I saw his pictures, the book is really, as somebody looked at it the other day and they said, this book is a work of art. The cover is a photograph. My niece one day went pick clover blossoms just because they were so beautiful. And she put them in a basket. And James took a picture of it.
Wow.
And that's the cover of the book.
That's so special because it's so personal to you.
And then my nephew, who's been coming to the house since he was a child, wrote the last essay in the book about his life of coming to that house. Because that's what this house has been about. I mean, it's I don't have children, but my family, I've had weddings, christenings, lots of parties. It's alive. The house is very alive. And I think that's why I called it Life in the Garden.
Oh my God, Bunny, that's so special. Let's talk a little bit about interior design and gardening in general. Is there a favorite element of the design process for you?
You know, I'm sure you feel the same way. There's nothing more exciting than a new project. You know, you get, you know, someone hires you and you've got this room or this house and you have to look at it and sit back and, you know, your adrenaline goes wild. And it's the same in the garden. And, you know, when I started gardening, I bought this house over 40 years ago. I actually bought it. I hadn't even started my own firm when I bought this house. I didn't know anything. I just knew petunias or, you know, peonies. And I just actually in those days just loved digging in the dirt and planting something. And like anything, a great garden needs structure. It needs a design. And I've learned that, studied gardens, traveled, looked at every garden I could possibly see in England, France, Italy, Portugal. You just realize that you've got to start with great design, just as you do with interiors. Right. You can't just rush off and throw a lot of stuff together without thinking of where are you going with this? Mm-hmm. And then you can have fun, you know, breaking your own rules a little bit. But you do have to have, to me, a fundamental concept of where I'm going. Now, with, you know, with decorating, you have to talk to your clients. How are they going to live? What's the, there's a lot of things that go into it before.
Right.
But then you kind of sit there and think, oh, well, what could I do here? And, you know, I think what bothers me so much is that you see so much reproduced stuff that has been on Pinterest and somebody copies this and copies that and stuff. So I sort of almost don't want to look at any things anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to go back into my own brain and things I've seen and
travel and the vintage books. I feel like that's where,
yeah,
I try to not look on Instagram or Pinterest because it's just, you're seeing the same room copied
over and over and over again.
Yeah. And it's really frustrating. And you can find so many interesting ideas from, you know, starting to create a library of vintage books in your office or traveling. That's a big theme that we talk about on the podcast all the time. We had Gil Schaefer on recently, and he said the same thing, and Peter Pannoyer, you know, just the importance of travel and reading and really understanding the history of design and why that's so important to be able to iterate, but for it to look original and feel correct for the client that you're designing for.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, I come back to knowledge. The more you know, the more you're comfortable, then you can have the fun of doing something unexpected because
right.
you know it's going to work.
Yes.
If you're always so insecure that you've just got to go copy something you've seen, you're not going to be that creative a designer.
That's very true. When you're designing a room or a garden, do you think there's any particular element that's the most important?
Well, they're so different. I mean, you know, a garden, to me, you've got to create the floor plan because you're outside and there are no walls, there are no walkways there. So you've got to create your floor plan
right.
before you start planting. In a way, you have the same in a house. I mean, if you've got a project, you got to create the flow and the floor plan to make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we always start with the floor plan before we even do textiles because
right. oh,
we have to know where everything's going. Do you believe in design rules? Like, is there a rule you always follow, or do you think there are some that are really made to be broken?
I think one of the things that I think is crucial is having the right scale of things.
Yes.
It's not so much what they are, but, you know, I go in a room and there's chairs that are too small
mm-hmm.
or, you know, next to something that's too big. Scale drives me crazy when the scale's yeah. wrong.
Yes.
And I think it's something that you need to really train your eye to understand what scale is.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a little bit like Mrs. Parrish. I can see a chair and know that's the right size or that's too small or that's too big. But it's just years of experience. You know, what's interesting about breaking rules, it's like hanging a picture. Yes, you can hang one big picture of a sofa, but also you can hang many pictures, but it's more complicated. But the scale's still there. I mean, the balance is still there. And I think yep. those things make a big difference.
What do you think is the best advice for designing interiors or a garden that you've ever received?
I think one of the most important things, particularly, and I wouldn't say this about my garden, but I would say it about design, is if you're going to be a professional, you have to realize it's a business.
Yeah.
And I think that there are a lot of very talented people who've made a big mess of things, and your clients want that from you. So not only do they want your creative talent, but the husbands that come back over and over again come back because they trust the business side of my business.
Yeah, it's a service business. We talk about it all the time.
It's a service business, and we have to remember that. Mrs. Parrish used to say, you can do the biggest job in the whole world, and you'll lose that client if you don't deliver the lampshade on time.
Oh, yes, 1,000,000%.
That's all they remember. They don't remember what you pull through to get it done, but they remember, where's that lampshade? I thought I'd never see it.
And they're not supposed to know what you had to, you know, do to get it all done either.
You know, gardening, I think that the advice that I either didn't get or didn't listen to is, you know, I always say the biggest difference between gardening and a house is, you know, a house you can, you know, you could vacuum, you know, twice a week and dust a little bit. A garden takes 7 days a week, 5 days a week, year-round maintenance.
Yeah. And it's so physical too.
And it's physical. You know, if you want your property to look good, you know, it's sort of like a romance. You never see the bad parts in the beginning. Everything seems fabulous. You know, you keep creating this garden. I said to somebody, if I ever talk about another garden, please take me off to Gardeners Anonymous and tell them to have my head examined.
It's hard. I mean, gardening is, well, nature doesn't stop. So
no,
you can't let it go. It can't, it doesn't end. Let's talk a little bit about you kind of on a more personal level. I mean, you've written so extensively about your home and your gardens, but what do you think that your home and garden says about you?
You know, again, it's that I do care about the sense of home. I think it's why I do what I do. You know, I think some designers design for design's sake.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I want to design for people that want to use their home, that want to, because my home brings me a tremendous amount of joy.
Mm-hmm.
And it has from the time I bought it when I couldn't afford to furnish the rooms. I mean, the living room sat empty for 5 years, but it didn't mean that we didn't start entertaining and cooking and, you know, doing things in a very simple way. So yes, I love to travel, but I can't wait to get home.
Yeah. I think most interior designers are that way. I was talking to Gil Schaefer a couple of weeks ago about this kind of question, and he kind of had the same answer. It's, you know, just such a pure love for the fact that we get to create these homes for our clients, and that this is where their memories are and where they create their, you know, their lives. And I think it's a really special thing to be tasked with.
You know, it's why I think Gil's work has such a soul, and I hope mine does too, because that's where the essence comes from. It's not to just make the biggest, fanciest statement.
Yes.
You know, I just finished a big house in Florida, and really big house. And, you know, I was like, okay. And yet people come into this house and they're like, I can't believe how warm it is. I mean, the dining room seats 20 people. And they had a dinner, you know, but you make it warm. You make it, the living room's got enough furniture that it's human scale, that people are comfortable. And
yeah,
it's grand. And yet, you know, it's got, you know, upholstered chairs with blue cotton on it. So.
Right. And that's kind of the hallmark of your work. It's elegant. And at the same time, it's comfortable and livable. And it says so much. It's personal. It says so much about each client. And I think that's what makes a house a home.
You know, it's interesting when I have many wonderful friends that I love. Some are in the design business, obviously. Some are not. I mean, some couldn't care less. I have some friends whose houses, not so great, but
yeah.
but I love them. They're smart, interesting. I can talk about something other than design. But what I want is, I want people to always walk in my house and feel comfortable, whether they care about design. Or, I mean, we have these garden tours. We have 600 people come one day. They come to look at the garden, but they walk in that barn and they go, oh my God, this is the most comfortable room. They don't really know that much about design.
Yeah.
But they feel, you feel something. And that's what I hope that my legacy will be, is that you feel something.
I love that. I think you've touched the industry in so many ways, and you've kind of upended it in so many ways. And I think that a big part of that is because you create spaces that are comfortable and long lasting. They have nothing to do with trends or what's in or what's not in. They're real, and they're a reflection of the client, and also a reflection of your knowledge and your taste and the history that goes behind it. And so I think that's definitely why it's such a long lasting firm, and also what your legacy is and will continue to be.
Oh, you're very sweet. I don't have any copies of the book. I can't wait to send you a copy when I get it.
I can't wait to see it.
But this is the juxtaposition of how I feel. There's some big pictures of the formality. There's parts of the garden that are very formal. But my favorite picture is the picture of my woodpile, because it's the juxtaposition of formality and real and informality. And I think designers need to let that happen. And sometimes they're afraid to do that.
Yeah. The tension. You need the tension. Otherwise, it's like contrast. It's the same thing. You need it.
Right.
Well, the last minutes of our podcast, we always ask everybody 10 little questions, and they have nothing to do with design. They're just kind of about you.
Okay.
So what is your favorite food?
Well, I'm always trying to lose weight. So,
oh my goodness, you do not need to.
My favorite food is a Mediterranean salad. I could eat beans, peppers, and onions, cucumbers all day long.
We have like a little newsletter, and one of the recipes that we put out this week is basically that, with lentil and feta. It's so good.
That's all I want to eat.
It's really healthy too. What is your favorite drink?
I like tequila and tonic.
I love that. Favorite film?
Indochine.
Ooh, that's a great choice. No one said that one yet.
Oh, that's the most divine. Catherine Deneuve, you know, Indochine was Vietnam. I mean, it was before it became Vietnam. It's the most extraordinary film.
It's a beautiful film, too.
Yeah.
Favorite hotel?
Oh, that one's really hard. You know what I love? The wonderful hotel in the south of France, behind the Palace of the Popes in Avignon, La Mirande. And it's the most beautiful hotel. And when I stayed there for a week, I hope it's still wonderful. I haven't been there in a while. I said to him, how much do you charge by the month?
I have to look it up.
Divine.
That's also like one of the most beautiful places in the world too.
Yeah.
Favorite city?
Probably London.
Yeah. I feel like New Yorkers, there's a synergy.
I just know London. I mean, I love Paris. You know, I spent more time in London. I love Paris. But, you know, if I'm going to go someplace for a long weekend, I'll probably go to London.
Yeah. I mean, there's no better place to shop.
Right.
This is a question we ask everybody in the interiors world, because I think people are so particular about their bedding.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I only like to sleep on percale sheets. Mm-hmm. I love Matouk sheets. We have a company here called Casa de Blanco that makes custom sheets, but I want that really crisp, almost cool percale. But my favorite thing that I have, and I try to talk all my clients into it, once I do it, they really love it, is the company store makes something called a down blanket.
Yes.
And you put a top sheet on, and you put this down blanket, and then I put a, you know, a coverlet on top of it. And that down blanket keeps me warm in the winter, cool in the summer. It is the most divine thing in the whole world. And I cannot sleep in bed without my down blanket.
I have to tell you, I heard, I think, Rita Koenig talking about the company store down blanket before, and I have one.
I think she probably heard it from me, because I've talked about it for 20 years.
It was honestly the most life-changing thing that I've added to my bed. I have that exact thing.
Yeah.
And it makes your bed feel like a hotel. It's incredible.
Exactly. And it's not too heavy.
No.
And I can't fight a duvet. I mean, the whole idea of trying to get the duvet on the foot of the bed to look nice. And this is, I find it just perfect.
Yes. You heard it from Bunny, and I can give you a personal testimonial. It is very comfortable. Tea or coffee, and how do you take it?
I have coffee with a tiny little bit of milk.
Very classic. It's appropriate. Playlist. What do you like to listen to?
I love Marvin Gaye. I love a lot of that kind of great rock soul.
Yeah.
But now, recently, and this is, we go back and forth to the country, we have started listening to a lot more classical music. And I just listened to Mozart's last two symphonies. And I've always liked classical music. Now I'm like really getting into it.
It's so peaceful. I listen to WQXR. You can stream it online. And I listen to that while I'm working, because I can't hear words while I'm working.
Your ear just gets to hear things that are that you listen to. And so I'm listening to, I love Mozart, love Brahms, I love, you know, Beethoven. So I listen to a lot more classical music, particularly if we're in the car, you know, we'll listen to a symphony and it's fabulous.
Yeah. I think for creative people too, like our brains kind of go all over the place. And I think classical music is very grounding. Okay. Two more questions. Favorite weekend activity?
Gardening.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
And also we have a greenhouse. So in the winter, I love repotting things and, you know, watching things go. So I really love to be in the garden or the greenhouse.
It's so good for you too. I think like your body, I think being around nature is just good for you through osmosis. Our last rapid fire question, and this is a really hard one. What is your favorite design book?
Oh, one of the books that, you know, it's an old book. It was, I think, Vogue's People and Their Houses Lifestyle. You know, it's got, what's her name on the cover sitting at her dressing table.
Yep.
It's books like that that I really find interesting because their lifestyle, it's not just design, but it's people living in a space. And I find that really wonderful.
It shows the realness of how people are actually using their spaces.
And there's so few of those because people, you know, don't want to be photographed in their houses. And
yeah.
So books like that interest me more.
Yeah.
But I look at everything. I mean, and I think it's, you know, you need to look at the history. You need to look at Mario Praz. You need to look at, you know, study Jean-Michel Franck books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a new book on Frances Elkins. I mean, she's an amazing designer. And you get inspired by it. But you do go back to those ones where, I mean, I even have scrapbooks that I took from when, you know, Vogue used to have wonderful lifestyle of people and even the New York Times newspaper. I mean, I have those things still inspire me.
Well, Bunny, thank you so, so much for joining me. This was truly like the most delightful interview experience I've ever had. And I just feel so grateful to have had you on. Final question. Do you have any advice for someone looking to define their own interior style, like someone who doesn't really have a style, they don't know kind of who they are yet?
I do think it's important to, it's funny, we often ask a new client to send us a book on, you know, what's inspired them. And one day we got this huge notebook from a client that had every style known to man in it.
Right.
And I do think that when you're young and starting out, it does help to kind of rip out some things, print out some things, and look at them over and over again. Because the more you look at them, you go, you know, I don't really want that.
Right.
But you often don't know where you're going in the beginning. And I do think that it helps to, I mean, I know for myself, things I cut out and put in my scrapbook, 5 years later, I throw them out.
Right.
So you edit your own, what you thought looked good at the moment, you kind of go, oh no, I don't like this. So I do think that's an exercise people starting out should do. I mean, people do it with flat fashion. You know, you think, oh, I like this. And you should do the same thing with decorating because it'll help you train your eye. And it also will help you to start eliminating.
Yeah. Helping yourself find that through line and learning how to edit, I think is one of the best tips to sort of cultivating your own personal style.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Bunny. I'm so, so, so thrilled to be able to talk to you. And
well, you've been a great person for me to be interviewed by. I've loved every minute of it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And Bunny Williams, Life in the Garden, your new book is out on March 5th. So everybody go pre-order it now. And I just am so grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's so wonderful. I've loved this conversation.
That's a wrap for this week's episode of Talk Shop. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more thoughtful discussions and amazing guests. Make sure you follow on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify so you never miss an episode. And of course, follow me at Ariel Oaken. See you next week.